I think we'll kick off. Welcome to Stuart Rogers Health, Aging, and Superannuation. Stuart Rogers is a partner in Deloitte and the head of the actuarial health practice area. His focus is on the strategic issues that impact on health financing. His clients include both governments and insurers. He's currently the appointed actuary for two private health insurers. His career has taken him into roles in Australia, the UK, Singapore, and Japan. Prior to joining Deloitte nearly 10 years ago, it included a wide range of other positions, including corporate development strategy, marketing, various actuarial roles, including appointed actuary of a UK life insurer, leader of a superannuation business, and 5 years as director of a life insurer. Stuart is also a member of the Institute of Actuaries Private Health Practice Committee, and for a while was the convener. Just to remind you that when you do have questions, please state your name and your organization, and Stuart would like to run through the presentation and have the questions at the end. Thanks, Stuart.
Thanks, Ben. I need to apologize for the absence of my colleague, Ignatius Lee, who's done a lot of the work on this as well. He's currently in Hong Kong working with a client. This paper is actually a reprise of something we presented to health audience 2 or 3 years ago, and that we've taken round health audiences and a minority of superannuation audiences. And it brings together work from Deloitte's superannuation practice modelling the superannuation industry and from our health practice looking at the demand for health expenditure for people in retirement. Asks the questions, do they work together? So, just to kick off with a bit about health costs and older ages, we'll whiz through this fairly quickly, but Australian health expenditure increases with age. The older you are, the more you cause to be spent on health. And if you split that up into individual components of health cost, it's still true. So you can look at public hospitals and pharmaceutical benefits there. You could look at other aspects as well. You'd still see that not only is the total health expenditure per person increasing with the age of that person, but the components do as well. Of course, that's the period when we're not earning income, and yet the price signals that lead to an economically effective health system still need to have charges being made. So when we look at the components that an individual actually has to pay out of their own pocket, which is the bit that is more relevant to private savings and superannuation, it's about 24% of our total health expenditure. 43% coming from government, the Australian government, another 25% coming through the state governments. There is, after you allow for the federal government rebate, still 7.6% of the total health expenditure is the premiums we pay for health insurance. And then there's another 16.8% coming out of our own pockets, co-payment each time we see the doctor, co-payment each time we have a prescription, other allied health. So nearly a quarter of Australia's total health expenditure comes out of individuals' pockets. And that proportion is growing, it is roughly constant over time. So as our health expenditure grows and grows slightly faster than GDP, so also is the amount coming out of our own pockets growing. In Australia, the older you are, the more your expenditure is for personal health costs. So here's some information from the Household Expenditure Survey. Up the top, we have a lone person, a young person aged under 21, aged under 30. And quite low as a proportion of their income. And as we get up to the older people, a couple only, lone person 65 and over, more towards the right. And another way of looking at it is if you break people up by where is their income, and you can see that the dollars they spend on health are highest for people who are not wages or unincorporated business, but other income. So self-funded retirees, fairly significant in there. And then, of course, government pensions, smaller amount of pension, smaller amount of ability to be spent on health. You've got the various degrees of government support. But when you look those pictures together, the combination of this age cost curve and this 24% of it comes out of our own pockets, you've got to ask the question, what if the combination of that curve and that bill that keeps growing just leads to major unaffordable health costs in old age? What is it about our system that deals with that, prevents it, or actually recognises it coming and makes choices about where that should be? Or does it just blow off the page? For a moment, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on how other countries deal with this, and then I'll come back to Australia. And if we look inside health policy, first of all, you can see four main methods as you look around the world at how out-of-pocket affordability for older people is managed. And the four main things are, really, government funding should be number one. Even in private enterprise-driven USA, there's significant, very significant government funding for the older people. Community rating is a really important evener of costs. If you look at the risk-rated health insurance premiums for the older retired people in countries that do that, Singapore, anywhere, you'll find that they're immensely high and difficult to afford unless you've planned well in advance for it. Community rating is a major evener of cost for older people. You've got the employer, ex-employer support in the USA, and then the fourth one, pre-funding. So for Singapore, for example, they have health savings accounts, Medisave, deliberately designed to bring forward the funding of later health costs. If you look at those four elements, though, they're all really policy-driven, and we're talking about a personal need for money later in age. And to my mind, this raises the question of, well, where is the financial services industry in this picture, right? Community rating is kind of a financial services thing. Pre-funding can very definitely be a financial services thing, but where is it? So to answer that question, we've looked at, in Australia, superannuation and those personal health costs. And we've modelled the interaction of those, and I'm not going to claim massive sophistication. We've got a pretty good model of the superannuation industry. We've got a reasonable model of out-of-pocket health costs and put them together. But as you'll see as we go through, it raises questions that need more detailed analysis. And our question, when we put these two together, is whether the growth that we see in superannuation balances, the real growth, not the nominal growth, is going to more than offset the real growth that you see in the cost that people need to allocate to healthcare. We have not included non-superannuation assets in this. And this is our key comparison. If you have a pot of superannuation at age 65, how much of that pie is going to go on all your future health costs? So we're using the present value of future personal health costs, not the government-paid ones, the ones that come out of your own pocket, as the measure for that. Estimated from the Household Expenditure Survey, Health Price Index, we did our own estimates, but we did follow and compare our results with a paper by John Goss, a former director of the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, we did our own model, but kind of calibrated against his as well. And as a result, we got our own figures for the lump sum you'd need to set aside at age 65 to, on average, meet your out-of-pocket health costs. And we're looking at how it compares to superannuation each of the next 5 years, 2012, 17, 22, 27, 32, so over a 20-year period. So first of all, superannuation. I said we've used for this the Deloitte supermodel, and I think some people in the room might be familiar with that, but it's a model that takes different types of superannuation fund. Within each of those types of superannuation fund has model points for different characteristics of the kinds of members, and every 2 years or so we produce a report about the state of the superannuation industry, which includes some of that modelling result. In real terms, we're seeing that we're going to have more superannuation in 2012 dollars over time. Not really a surprise, and in most of those different types of funds, it's a continuously increasing amount. We reckon that roughly 160,000 average balance for a 65-year-old in Australia at the moment. Clearly, a huge span across individuals within that, but that's our rough calibration. So far, so good. The real value of our superannuation is growing. We knew that. If we look at the health expenses, just a reminder that you've got total health, government, non-government. Inside the non-government, you've got what we pay out of our own pockets to health insurers, what we pay out of our own pockets for services, and then the others, which are like the workers' comp schemes and so on. And our figures that we get from the household expenditure survey suggest that for all people above 65, the average expenditure per annum, just over $2,000, $2,100, for a household with a reference person over 65. So we've then worked from that back to what we think is the cost at age 65 and each age similar after that. We've done that by taking different versions of those age cost curves that I showed you at the beginning for health, and working back that if on average it's $2,100 for people over 65, then we reckon it's round about approximately $1,773 for a person, the average person, age 65. We work with that and an assumption of real personal health cost growth of 3.6%. That's above health inflation. And we come out with, as again you'd expect, that an individual will face real cost growth depending when they retire over the next 20 years. $42,000 roughly for someone turning 65 today, the average person, going up to over $90,000 in 20 years' time, right? Is that a surprise? It's not really a surprise. As we get more and more disposable wealth, one of the goods that we choose to spend far more on marginally is keeping ourselves healthy and well. The utility of getting yourself back on your feet when you're not, particularly when you're retired, is very high. So dollars get chosen to be spent on it. And I'm not suggesting that out at this end of the spectrum, everything that has to be spent on health is a catastrophe type must spend. It will have a lot to do with keeping ourselves in an active lifestyle instead of a passive, sedentary, disabled lifestyle. So we've got real superannuation growth. We've got real health cost growth. Is one running away from the other? Well, actually, no. They're clearly, depending on the assumptions you use, and I've shown three sets here, we've got variations in the health cost growth. Our base of 3.6%, a lower figure, 3.2% per annum, a higher figure, 4.2% per annum. So there's roughly a 1% spread there, which, when you're talking about gaps in the yield, is worth looking at. And we're seeing that for the next decade, superannuation growth, real superannuation growth on our model will outpace the health cost growth. But it slows, and in the second decade from now, on these numbers, starts to go up again. And what's happening there, we see that, of course, the 9% is reaching maturity, so that the balances coming out of 20 to 30 years of that level of contribution no longer increase as rapidly, reaching some kind of level of maturity. We see that the 12% cuts in, and these figures include that 12%, but still increasing longevity and the underlying just continuing growth in what we choose to spend on health means that we have a situation that hasn't reached stability on our numbers. That's one part of the story. The other part of the story is that it's still, on our numbers, it's in a manageable range. It's in a 15 to 25% manageable range. So it's not running away over the lifetime of anyone in this room. But on the other hand, again, if you think that of your total wealth, a quarter of it is going to go in one particular expenditure area, that's very significant. Allow for family home, allow for assets outside this, and it's less than a quarter, but there's still a very substantial proportion of costs you are going to spend out of your own pocket if you're 65 plus on into the future. I've shown here whether the 12% makes any difference, and in the final of those five-year periods, it starts to show up. So we've got a bit over 22% of your 65 pot needed in the 9% world, and by 20 years' time, it's down to 21.5%, and starting to make some difference. Still a significant portion that you're going to spend on health. And we've also looked at does it matter what kind of individual you are, what kind of superannuation fund? This, for if I'm talking to a health audience, this is a really important slide because it's the closest we can come to any kind of socioeconomic statement. But in audiences of people who are health system practitioners or whatever, the socioeconomic elements are really important. And so this thing about the industry funds, which out of these graphs is possibly the closest proxy to middle to lower socioeconomic grouping, is really important for that kind of audience. And they would see two things. They would see that it is getting better, but it's still much higher than other parts of society. And they would then immediately need to go to the components of health that we have in there. I'm going to move on today, though. So, in summary, we have health policy driven out of the Department of Health and Ageing. We have superannuation policy driven out of Department of Finance, Financial Services. Two major social security policy areas, which you don't very often hear the same minister speaking about both at once. We've put some numbers together to see whether, in any way, these two areas are aligned. Right? My sense from those numbers is that while the health cost is significant, they're not moving apart from each other. That's not totally due to random chance. One of the things that features in the superannuation debate is affordability, and health costs are one of the elements that goes, sorry, not affordability, your ability to live on your superannuation. And clearly health costs are going to be a component of that. So it's not accidental, but it's still a very large proportion. And we haven't yet got to the massive spread between individuals inside those averages. All I've really established so far is that the amount of money sloshing around in the superannuation national pot is roughly enough to produce manageable outcomes in the health funding pot. And I posed a question a little while back, well, where is the financial services industry in this, right? To my mind, the financial services industry's role in this is to produce structures, products, systems which allow the distribution of this superannuation pot to meet the needs sitting over here that each individual has, right? Whether it's a financial plan. It's clearly not part of today's financial plans. But that's not all. There are other demands on this pot. The Productivity Commission, which the government has now just come out with some of its reactions to. Productivity Commission said older Australians have had the opportunity to accumulate other wealth such as retirement savings, therefore have the financial capacity to contribute to their cost of care. My emphasis. But there's a hand going into the superannuation pot, pulling out for aged care. And some of the government's recommendations have been that the more you have, the more you should pay for your aged care. Right? So any comfort from my previous slides? Yeah, just a little bit of pressure here. Individuals should contribute to the cost of their personal care according to their capacity to pay. From another angle, new financial services products are possible. So if you go to the AMA, the Australian Medical Association's website, you'll see there's still a policy statement about a financial services product called health savings accounts. And there's a quote from there. I'll let you read it. It just describes something that we know is possible. Like a lot of financial services products, it needs some kind of policy, social policy area around it to give it legs. But there it is. The doctors would like to see this industry do something extra to help with this issue. Productivity Commission made statements on equity release, which so far the government has not adopted. And the Productivity Commission also made statements about special bond investments to help people move out of their own home, deal with ageing and aged care. Right? So the story is still developing about what are the financial resources you need to manage your health and care requirements in old age. So what? We think that taking a systematic approach to how our society deals with these is important, how retired people afford their health costs. It's a blend of putting aside the resources well beforehand at the time that you can, sharing resources in a community rating kind of way, whether through premiums or taxation, and also planning for the extreme variability between different health outcomes for different people. Government, industry and individuals each have a role, but surely what is partly a financial planning problem should have a financial services solution inside it somewhere. Superannuation growth is helping, but we can't be complacent. The kind of numbers we were looking at show that it doesn't keep helping forever, and B, everyone else has their eye on the pot as well. The third one, is the distribution of outcomes acceptable? Right? And this is I've heard this talked about in superannuation audiences as well, that while we're focused on the accumulation phase of our superannuation sector, all is good, the numbers get better and better, but as individuals then come to have to live off what their own particular pot generated, does the system produce reasonable outcomes in a high enough proportion of cases? It's even more significant with health. And the place of insurance against some of these needs for older people hasn't fully been tested yet as a solution. Again, how will financial services help to manage that spread of requirements? And what should the different parts of the private sector, and I'm really pushing this as a private sector problem, I'm not pushing it as a problem to be solved by the government sector, partly because that health expenditure becomes more and more discretionary, less and less response to a catastrophe. How should the private sector, what should it be doing now to meet this emerging need? If we can see a need for financial resource in the future, and here we are now, that's what our industry is about, is planning for the future financial requirements. There's also a question of what responsibility individuals have, and back in a health audience, I'd be talking about the need to get yourself on the good side of those variations, that if you are smoking and overeating and not exercising, then you should not see a presentation like this and say they ought to do something about it. You should see a presentation like this and say I ought to do something about it. But I'm not talking to a health audience, and I can't see anyone here who's fat, and everyone walked into the room, so exercise is going fine. Right, I have at the end a little bit about the Deloitte supermodel, just to establish that we did have some key assumptions, and I've just gone back off it again. But there, in essence, is the story. The two areas kind of built independently, a little bit of a bridge between. Superannuation definitely helping in the short run, a little bit by accident perhaps. What should we do if we were really, as a private sector, as a financial services industry, making sure that Australia did meet these needs properly? Happy to take questions, comments, arguments.
Hajana Vant from UNSW. I was interested really in your modelling, and I saw you used an average spending, but I was wondering, could you not get the age profile of spending from this expenditure survey and use that instead of the average?
The surveys that we got ourselves access to had clumps of expenditure. And yes, we could spend some money and get more detailed age breakups, both private sector and elsewhere around. We could have got that. We didn't, but it would be a... I suspect that would be less useful as a next step than modelling different types of person, right? Not so much age-driven as state of health-driven or socioeconomic grouping-driven.
And I guess coming from a German background where we have a very comprehensive healthcare system and face ever-increasing healthcare costs, I was actually quite positively surprised by the results you show. I expected it to be much more dramatic. Did you assume that health cost inflation is similar to CPI?
We had underlying health cost inflation in the high threes, and then we've built another 3.6% on top of that. So we're looking in today's kind of environment at a nominal 7 to 8% growth per annum of health costs in this position, and inflation in Australia running at 2 to 3%, GDP growth running at 2%. So we've got substantial real health cost growth built in, compounding for 20 years in these pictures.
And just to understand why the costs were not, the present value wasn't higher, was long-term care included or not? In
the... No, not the long-term care, no.
Ray Murray from Sun Super Street, thank you very much. I know nothing about this area, so it was very interesting. Is there not another question that we should, from a public policy point of view, link superannuation and health together? Is that not the implication of what you're saying? What I'm saying is, in one sense, people are saving and they're going to spend whatever money they have, so should there not be an argument back to government that health is your real risk, and what you've actually got to do is reinforce the super... You know, to get the community to think about combined savings for retirement and later health, and is that not the debate we should be having, rather than trying to set up another system for health over here? So, and is it a debate we could have, and could we win it?
Ray, look, I totally agree with you. The whole thrust of this is, from my point of view, to take two areas that have been separate and put them together, because to the individuals concerned, the customer of each system is a single customer. So, yes, I think very definitely an integrated solution is required. Superannuation, clearly part of it, but I don't think superannuation is enough of the solution, doesn't deal with the diversity of requirements, also doesn't... It defers expenditure until you are a healthy retired person, doesn't as well defer expenditure until you are an unhealthy retired person. So But absolutely, I agree with you. An integrated approach is, I think, what's needed. And it's partly to do with products and types of funds, partly to do with the advice that people receive and the way that a financial advisor helps you manage your financial resources and a GP helps you manage your health resources. Both are pretty significant in those later years.
When we look at healthcare risk and we see the heterogeneity and the uncertainty that people face, isn't it a typical case for insurance? Why do we talk about healthcare saving plan and not healthcare insurance, which seem much more natural?
I'd talk about both. The healthcare savings is because of no matter who you are, you're going to spend more on health in old age. That's just true. But to manage that, so there's two things. There is a predictable need for more money in old age to deal with health. Savings deals with predictable needs. There's also an unpredictable need hitting some people for massive expenditure on health. Insurance meets that. So things like critical illness for very old people, some form of insurance against chronic illnesses before they hit you, which is part savings because you know it's hit you, and part insurance because you don't know the intensity of how it's hit you. Long-term care insurance that you mentioned, which has been tried in Australia not very successfully. But I see all of those features in the Singapore system. A health savings account run by the Central Provident Fund, which is their central retirement account. So, Ray, it's a bit like a earmarked part of their whole retirement. They talk about CPF contributions of roughly 40%, but of that 7% goes off into health savings. The other 33 goes into retirement savings, but you take your mortgage out of your retirement savings. So there's an example of an integrated pre-funding for life needs solution in Singapore. But Singapore also have a quarter of their population in long-term care insurance.
Hi, Greg Black. You alluded to one example there in terms of Singapore, and I realise any solution has got to be country-specific because of the range of pension, tax, ageing kind of implications that are specific to the country. What other countries do you see doing good things in this area? Like we always see Norway or someone held up.
If I go back to that, what did we see in other countries? It's hard to find someone who has really got it down pat. You'd have to say that the UK, if you do have a national health system, right, then you've sorted it all by a different way. You just haven't used the private sector. So that kind of system, a tick. After that, I think it's tricky. The US is struggling with it. It's very private sector oriented. It does have an animal called a health savings account. It's also now, with Obamacare, starting to take steps towards community rating, limits on the extent to which you can rate premiums. But I don't see any country I don't see any country where the solution is there and it's not a fully government-driven solution. Maybe in Germany.
Well, in Germany you pay about like 14.5% of your salary into public health insurance. It's quite a lot. It's stupid because rich people can opt out. Like above an income threshold, you can be out of the public system. So all the good risks go out and pay private insurance. And it's very comprehensive cover in old age. So it's a system that becomes more and more expensive, and you can really, every 2 or 3 years, this contribution from your income is increased, so it's just a system that gets more and more expensive.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem with any insurance-based system, that unless you somehow pre-fund for the increasing insurance premiums, you won't be able to afford the insurance premiums. So there's a...
Well, it's a government system, but many people, in addition, have private health insurance for dental or stuff.
The Netherlands is experimenting with a new system which has everyone covered and community rating inside that, but early days yet to see whether it's fully worked for their aged.
Ken Lockery, just on the subject of community rating, I guess there were lots of slides I could ask you lots of questions about, but the future of community rating in a context of an ageing population and health insurance being voluntary. So presumably when you look at your graphs about costs going up and the population moving to the right, young people who already, I guess, see the premiums for health insurance as way higher than seems reasonable to them, just seems to me the premiums are going to, in real terms, double or more as the population ages. And I wonder whether a community rating approach is sustainable with an ageing population?
In Australia, it is sustainable, but it takes certain things to keep it sustainable. The biggest pressure on it actually isn't the ageing of the population overall. The biggest pressure on it, because that age cost curve gets averaged down, and so it's quite a slow element that. The biggest pressure on community-rated health insurance is that medical know-how is increasing. New techniques are being developed to produce better health solutions that we as a wealthy country like to buy, right? So in some ways, Ken, as consumers, we're choosing to spend more on health, and that's the biggest driver of the community-rated health insurance premiums. The public acceptability of community rating is pretty strong. When asked, is it a good system, people prefer it to the age-rated, underwritten kind of jungle insurance system. But it does need support, right? So the government support measures are a way of our community keeping going a system which our community seems to prefer.
Can I ask you then an extension of the technology question? I bought my first PC in the early 1980s. It cost me $10,000. It has, 1 millionth of the power of the laptop that I buy today for $1,000. We keep seeing technology driving up healthcare costs. Are we ever going to see technology driving down healthcare costs? I mean, delivering at least the same level of healthcare for a much lower cost.
There's a lot of pressure in the health system to do that, but it's very difficult to resist as well, because you saw a political exercise a few years ago when Tony Abbott was health minister and a drug that would support breast cancer. The economist's approach was what you just said, that it's not a big enough improvement to justify spending. But the women who it truly would benefit, how do you discount their opinion in that? Heart pacemakers came in, new technology, price dropped, as your computers do, reached about $5,000, $10,000 for placement. Defibrillators came along about 6 years ago, $50,000, much better technology, right? So that's what you see going on. And of course, what's also going on, the computers are all mass market still, right? But the health treatments are a much smaller set of a market. And if you're in a drug company or a device company, really interesting marketing niche understanding. The question was, how do I stop my local doctor from sending me off for unnecessary risk, a test just to protect his risk, not mine? I think you have to be an active consumer of medical services and understand why. And in that case, we're all like a board of directors presented with an actuarial report, right? They're not actuaries, but they expect to be presented to in a way that they understand. And they take the responsibility to do their homework, so they do. And it's very similar. It's very similar to us, ordinary Australians, in the face of a medical expert. Do the same homework, expect the same from him, and play your part.
I think we better wrap it up there so that people can go to their afternoon tea. So join me in thanking Stuart for his really good speech.
Thanks very much.